Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We'll be in depth on how a political novice runs one of the most powerful governments in the world. But first, we're curious about whether the death of Fidel Castro will mean anything for the relationship between the U.S. and Cuba, particularly in a Trump administration. And we're getting some insight on that this morning via Twitter. William Leo Grand is with us. He's a professor of government at American University, where he specializes in Latin America. And he's with us from Washington. William, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And if you have questions about the U.S. relationship with Cuba or Fidel Castro for Professor Leo Grand, call in 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. William, I'm seeing a tweet here this morning from President-elect Trump, who says that he will terminate the deal with Cuba unless the Cuban government makes it, quote, a better deal for the Cuban people, the Cuban-American people, and the U.S. as a whole. Will you refresh our memories about what that deal involves?
Well, U.S. relationship with Cuba is a multifaceted, complex relationship. It is governed by laws. There are bilateral agreements that we've signed with Cuba. There are regulatory changes that President Obama has made that open up travel and commerce. So there's not a single deal. But I assume what he's really referring to is the general orientation of Obama's policy, which was a policy of engagement with Cuba rather than the old Cold War policy of hostility. Now, I think it's in some ways a good thing that Mr. Trump is implying, at least, that he's willing to continue talking to Cuba to see what kind of bilateral relationship we can have. Because during the campaign, when he was in Florida trying to rally the Republican base,
right,
he told Cuban Americans he was just going to reverse everything that Obama did. Now, at least, he's taking a little more of a nuanced position.
You're right. Here's what the president-elect said in September, specifically about Cuba, as you say, when Florida was in play, and obviously he wanted to rally as many voters as he could. But of all the concessions that Barack Obama has granted the Castro regime, were done with executive order, which means the next president can reverse them. And that is what I will do unless the Castro regime meets our demands. Those demands will include religious and political freedom for the Cuban people and the freeing of political prisoners. Now, some of that has been done under this arrangement that the U.S. has with Cuba presently, but I assume there's more room for negotiation. What do you think?
So Cuba has actually seen some progress on greater religious freedom and a little more space for political expression in the last few years. And I do think that that's partly as a result of the Obama's policy of engagement. But it has not come through direct negotiations. That is to say, it's not a matter of the United States saying, well, you're going to change this in your domestic politics or you're going to change that in your domestic economy in order to have better relations with us, because the Cubans react very badly to those kinds of demands. They regard those issues as matters of their own national sovereignty. Raul Castro said at one point, we don't tell the United States it has to become socialist in order to have a normal relationship with us. Why do they want us to become capitalists? So the Cubans are very sensitive. They're a very proud and nationalistic country. And if Mr. Trump thinks he's going to go start making demands of them about how to change their internal political arrangements, he's going to be disappointed.
So is it your sense that if Fidel Castro hadn't stepped out of the leadership role that he had in Cuba and then basically out of the spotlight, and Raul Castro had not been in charge, maybe the agreement that has been in place over the last couple of years wouldn't have happened? Would Fidel Castro have been interested in any of this?
Well, Fidel Castro was a lot more skeptical about the sincerity of the United States improving relations with Cuba. And we saw that when he wrote in the national newspaper right after Obama's trip last March that he didn't trust the United States and that Cuba didn't need anything from the United States and Obama shouldn't come down there and try to teach them lessons. So he was skeptical about it. On the other hand, he himself, when he was president, negotiated with the United States repeatedly on a wide range of issues. So he wasn't completely opposed to a better U.S.-Cuban relationship.
When was the last time you were able to get to Cuba? Has it been a while or has it been fairly recently?
I was there in June.
Okay.
And was able to really see on the ground the way in which ordinary Cubans were excited about the improvement in U.S.-Cuban relations. For them, they're hopeful that it means more travel and more trade and a better economy.
When I was there in March and talked about this with average Cubans, some of the drivers that we had, some of the guides, it appeared that not much had been happening, you know, at the neighborhood level, at the average Cuban level, that a lot of the changes had been going on at the government-to-government level. Did you see indications that average Cubans were benefiting from this warmer relationship?
Well, I think average Cubans are benefiting, but it's not everyone. So, for example, someone who works in the tourist sector of the economy has benefited because the number of visitors from the United States has doubled since December 2014. But someone who works in a state-owned factory out in a small town somewhere has not really seen much of a benefit. There has been a lot of progress at the diplomatic level in the last 2 years. We've signed a dozen different bilateral agreements with Cuba on issues of mutual interest.
Like what? I wasn't aware that there had been many agreements.
Cooperation on health care, fighting Zika, and opening the U.S. market to some promising Cuban pharmaceuticals. On environmental protection, both protected areas and oil spill prevention and mitigation. On law enforcement cooperation, just a wide range of different issues that benefit both countries. And I would doubt that President Trump would want to just abrogate all of those issues because that would harm the United States.
Should we note that many other places, many other leaders in the world, many other countries did not view Castro the way the United States did? And so his passing and his legacy will be viewed pretty differently than the American perspective on this.
Well, you can see that in the comments of foreign leaders from Europe, from Asia, from Africa, from Latin America, and even Canada, all of which have been much more laudatory toward Fidel Castro's legacy than any of the comments in the United States. Fidel Castro had a global presence. During his lifetime, Cuba led the non-aligned movement. Cuban troops helped defeat apartheid in South Africa. Cuba had good relations with many of the countries in Latin America. In fact, one of the reasons that President Obama pursued his policy of engagement was because the old policy of hostility was actually damaging U.S. relations with the rest of Latin America.
Really? So Raul Castro is 85, isn't he?
He is.
What's the succession plan for him?
He has said he will step down as president in 2018 at the end of his second five-year term as president. He has put term limits in place, so no senior official in Cuba now is allowed to serve more than 2 5-year terms. And there is a first vice president who is the constitutional successor. He's a 56-year-old former minister of higher education and Communist Party official. We don't know a lot about him simply because he obviously is not going to say anything in terms of policy that contradicts Raul Castro. But Cuba is marching toward a succession, not just of Raul Castro, but of that whole generation that founded the revolutionary government back in 1959. They're all in their 70s and 80s now, and they will all be stepping down over the next decade.
And so given the way the succession plan looks right now, I mean, something could change that, but the way the succession plan looks, Is this just a very gradual, I don't know, change that maybe more openness that happens incrementally in Cuba? Or is there an opportunity, do you think, for some of the kind of abrupt change we've seen in other parts of the world?
Well, clearly the leadership's plan is for a gradual kind of evolution. The Communist Party met for its 7th Congress earlier this year, and the new Political Bureau, which is the leading body of the Communist Party, is a clear mix of the older generation and a younger successor generation, both together in the body. And so it's clear that they envision a gradual, stable evolution. What happens when a new generation finally takes over, though, is difficult to predict. By the nature of it, they are going to have a very different life experience, a very different vision of Cuba's future, and we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out.
William, I'm really grateful for the insight. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
William Leogrand is a professor of government at American University, where he specializes in Latin America, giving us some insight this morning on what happens with the U.S. and Cuba relationship now that Fidel Castro has died.